Virginia is closing out the regular season playing its best and most thrilling basketball of the year. Virginia Tech may be showing enough fight to avoid playing Tuesday in Greensboro. We'll talk about all that and much, much more this week on Teal and Barkin. Welcome in to episode 2 of Teal and Barber, the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Richmond.com's new Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. I'm Mike Barber, the ACC beat writer for the paper, and I'm happy to be joined by my co-host here, 13-time Sports Writer of the Year and Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, David Teal. David, good to talk to you again.
Good afternoon, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Safely made it back from Blacksburg despite some traffic issues, which I know you're all too familiar with.
Greetings from gridlock on 81.
You've done it before and you'll do it again. Speaking of being stuck, I'll tell you who's not stuck anymore, and that's UVA basketball. They're really rolling at this point towards the postseason, really right in the middle of the race for, surprisingly, I think, the ACC title. And what is it about this Virginia team that has positioned them where I don't think either of us thought they would be at this point?
No, Mike, I would agree with you. After the home loss to NC State on January 20th, I don't think anyone, you, me, Tony Bennett's wife, Laurel, or anyone thought that the Cavaliers would win 10 of their next 11. And what makes it even more remarkable is the way they have done it. I mean, every night is just high drama. It's like watching a tightrope artist. And you're just convinced they're going to fall. And at the end, they somehow get to the other side. I mean, they've won 7 consecutive games, and one of them was by 13 points. The other 6 were by a combined 13 points. I mean, it's just crazy.
I'm glad you said it that way, because I wanted to ask you, after the Virginia Tech win, I wanted to ask you, is this sustainable? Can you keep winning games this way? And then here comes the Duke win, and then here comes the Miami win. And I'm starting to say, so what's the answer? Can they do this? Can this be sustained over another month of this?
No, at some point, it's going to cost you, and you're going to fall off that tightrope, and then your season's over when it comes to the NCAA tournament. But it is uncanny, Mike. Virginia is the first team in ACC history to win 9 conference games by 5 points or less. First team ever.
How does that happen? What are the elements that go into a team? Because there have been some good opponents in there. There have been some lesser opponents in there. There have been some home games. There have been some road games. There have been some great game-winning shots. There have been some late defensive stops. So what is it about this team that allows them to keep doing it?
I think there are a lot of components here. Number one is you have a veteran core of Mamadi Diakite, Kihei Clark, Braxton Key, and Jay Huff, who were a part of last season's national championship run. And no one will forget how harrowing those final 4 games were. So they've essentially been there, done that. And they know what it takes. They have that poise. They have that confidence. Second of all is the guy on the bench and his staff. Tony Bennett and his staff clearly are among the top 5 coaching groups in the country. I don't think anyone would dispute that. And then you have considerable good fortune. And it's true that that's how these things roll. You know, if Thomas Woloteanzi's shot at Chapel Hill doesn't go down, they lose there. If Trey Jones's 3 at the horn goes in, they lose at home to Duke. And last night, you know, bless his heart, Harlan Beverly, the Miami freshman, must have just lost track of the score and thought the Hurricanes were behind, because either that or he thought they only had 5 fouls or a foul to give, and he just intentionally fouls Kihei Clark, who, oh, by the way, is the number 2 free throw shooter in the league.
The last guy you want to foul there, and you don't want to foul anybody there, to your point. But yeah, so all of those pieces, and they keep doing it week in, week out, game in, game out. But you mentioned we're heading to a time of year where if one of those balls doesn't go down, if one of those plays doesn't go your way, it's over. Do they need to play with more margin going into the postseason, or is this the way we're going to enjoy Virginia basketball for however long it lasts till the end?
Well, I always go back to a question Tony Bennett was asked back in mid-December after a non-conference game against Stony Brook that was probably a little closer than it needed to be. The Cavaliers won by 10 or 12. I forget what the final margin was. But someone asked him, is this the way it's going to be all year? And essentially his answer was, yeah, deal with it. But I think he was coming to grips with it, and it's not that he didn't believe that his team could improve, but he just knew, and I think we all know now, that there are such limitations on offense that given the pace at which the Cavaliers play, which is the nation's slowest, it means limited possessions, and because they're not going to score routinely 70 or 80 points a game, that odds are the last 4 minutes are going to be decisive. And that's just the way it's been for the last, 6 weeks.
Now, we have seen some signs of life from this offense, and it started with the outside shooting and really opening things up. So is there a reason to believe that, hey, yeah, they're limited, but this team can still play a high level of offense? Or was that a nice little stretch there and it's probably behind us?
Well, I think it'll all depend on matchups, Mike. I mean, that's what the postseason is all about, especially the NCAA tournament, where you're playing people with whom you're not familiar. And yeah, this offense has potential. If Wolde Tensai shakes his current funk, what is he, one for his last 16? I mean, yeah, that's got to stop. But Diakite, he's become so good at just facing up there in the 12 to 16 foot range and, you know, jab stepping and what's he going to do? And then he just rises up. And more often than not, that shot goes in. He's scored in double figures 11 consecutive games. He's avoiding foul trouble. And oh, by the way, in his last two games, Jay Huff has scored 32 points, although last night's 17 might have been the most peculiar I've ever seen, because he scores the team's first 17 and then doesn't scratch the rest of the night.
I wanted to ask you about that because, I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen a player score that much of his team's offense and then virtually disappear from a production standpoint. So was that just a great adjustment by Miami? And answer me this, if Jay Huff can score 17 straight points on his own, how does Virginia ever lose?
Yeah, exactly. And they almost did last night. And you could make the argument, by the way, we talked about good fortune. Now, it wasn't for the young man, but for Virginia. When Chris Likes has to miss the last 12 minutes, he's Miami's best player. And he suffered a lacerated eye when a teammate, I believe they were going for a rebound. I mean, that elbow came down on his eye, and the replay was, man, that was painful to watch. And he's so much fun just and to watch him and Clark, go at it last night was wildly entertaining. But, I mean, that's, you know, that was part of it as well. But, you know, Huff can't go 0-for-6.5 and Virginia expect to coast. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, wildly entertaining and also a great victory for short people everywhere with Chris Likes and Kihei Clark matching up. I want to ask you before we move off of Virginia, they've got a rematch here with Louisville, and they played what may have been a pivotal game in the season, I think, when they lost at Louisville, because that's really where they started to get some of that good feeling about the Wolde Tensai and the shooting. And what do you see in this matchup, and how important is it to win this one going into the postseason?
Well, Mike, I think you make a good point that the 7-point loss notwithstanding, you can make the argument that that was the beginning of the Cavaliers' resurgence on offense. They averaged, I went and looked at the KenPom box score this afternoon. Virginia averaged 1.24 points per possession against Louisville that day. And that's its second best of the season. On the flip side, it was Virginia's worst defense of the season. Louisville averaged 1.36 per possession, which is unheard of against UVA. I think it is important as Virginia heads to Greensboro from a momentum standpoint. And also, I'm very interested to see Malik Williams, who is arguably Louisville's best defender and had 13 points and 6 rebounds in that first game. He's got an ankle issue, and he did not play in Louisville's most recent game. Now, is he going to be available on Saturday afternoon? I don't know. And to me, that's a pretty important component.
Yeah, and that changes things on the perimeter, where Wolde Tensai was 7 for 10 shooting threes in that game. But I think we forget that Kihei Clark was 4 for 6 from three-point range in that game. They really got something going. And maybe more importantly, David, they only turned the ball over 7 times. And this is supposed to be a good ball security team, right? They return their point guard. They play a slower pace. This is supposed to be a team that doesn't turn the ball over. They had some troubles with that at times this year. 7 turnovers against the way Louisville plays defense. I think that was another kind of tipping point of, hey, we understand that no matter what's happening on the perimeter, we can't give the basketball away. And obviously this time of year, that's tried and true. You can't give the ball away.
Yeah, it's all about guard play in March, and what Virginia's going to need to do Saturday at JPJ, much better than it did in Louisville earlier this season, is defend the interior. I mean, Jordan Noir and Stephen Enoch, especially Enoch, had their way in the paint that night. I believe Louisville had 28 or 30 points in the interior, and that can't happen again if the Cavaliers expect to win.
When you think about interior defense, defending a post player, I think of Vernon Carey Jr. and Duke, and that brings us to who you got.
Okay, question from headquarters. Who you got? UNC has gotten healthy and hot. Duke has suffered some really late losses. The two arch rivals are meeting on Saturday. So, David, Duke or Carolina, who you got?
With absolutely zero confidence, Dean, I will lean toward Duke, if only because a loss at home to Louisville notwithstanding, in conference, the Blue Devils have been so good at Cameron this season against ACC opponents. They've beaten teams by 39, 31, 30, 34, 24, 19. And yes, Carolina's won three league games in a row for the first time this season. And Cole Anthony and Brandon Robinson are healthy. But I'm going to shade toward Duke and just hope the game is half as bizarre as the Blue Devils' 98-96 win in overtime in Chapel Hill last month.
Okay, so Mike, I'll throw it to you now. Duke or Carolina, who you got?
Yeah, with even less confidence than David displayed in his answer, I'm going to say North Carolina pulls the upset. And here's the reason, and maybe it's stubbornness. I went into the year thinking that Cole Anthony was going to lead North Carolina to an ACC title. I thought he was going to be a transformative talent. I thought with what they have in the front court, this was going to be the best team in the ACC. Obviously, injuries derailed them. Obviously, there have been much deeper problems than just losing Cole Anthony for a stretch. But the team I've seen the last three games, that's kind of the team I was looking for. And you factor in how well they played against Duke in the first meeting, and I know that game was wacky and so many things went wrong and so many things went right if you're Carolina till the end. But I think Carolina gets it done. They're the feel-good story of the end of the ACC season. Roy Williams has endured such a tough year. I think they're on a little bit of a roll, and also with again, less than zero confidence, but I think Carolina goes into Cameron and gets the rivalry game.
Okay, so we're split.
We are split. Speaking of teams that kind of snapped out of a losing streak in a funk, Virginia Tech, here they go, snapping their losing streak. Clemson comes in. A Clemson team, David, that should have had a lot to play for, right? They're on the NCAA bubble. They're trying to solidify their position. What did Virginia Tech do right to pull out this victory?
Well, here's some sage analysis for you, Mike. The Hokies made shots, which they had not been doing of late. And P.J. Horn and Tyrese Radford just, I don't know what they were combined, but I know Virginia Tech shot in the 53-54% range last night, and that's the best of any Clemson opponent all season. And when the Hokies shoot it like that, they can beat a lot of people.
Tyrese Radford, 7-for-8 from the floor. P.J. Horn, 6-for-10 from the floor. To your point, that really changes things. And Mike Young, he walked into the postgame press conference. He looked around at all the reporters. He called us each out by name, and he said, "It's a lot better to see you guys when we win," which I think a lot of coaches have probably felt that way over the years. But he also made the point that you just made. Hey, everything's a little better when the ball goes in the basket. So with this team putting the ball in the basket, what can they get done here at the end of the year?
Well, a Saturday's regular season finale at Notre Dame is intriguing. You know, the Irish, they had Florida State stone cold beat last night. For by the way, the second time this season, because they did in Tallahassee too. And again, they butchered a late lead. Now, granted, Florida State may turn out to be the best team in the ACC, but that's just a game, especially at home, that you need to win. So now all of a sudden, Mike Bray's crew is 9-10 in the ACC. Yes, it's senior day, but how do they respond to that disappointment? Now, if they're right and the Hokies are right, because Notre Dame can stroke it now too, that could be a very high scoring and entertaining game. But I think it's a winnable game for the Hokies. I think they'll probably be a small underdog. But if they win, they are assured of not playing in Greensboro until Wednesday. I think that'd be a big bump for them.
Yeah, I know you and I had talked, and you made a very good point that for a team this young and this inexperienced, it might not be the worst thing to go to Greensboro and have a winnable game day one. But to the point you just made, too, and Mike Young mentioned, it'd be a pretty nice feather in the cap of this team that was expected to finish at the bottom of the league, right, to avoid that?
Yeah, I think so. And there will be a winnable game on Wednesday. If you had put the over-under on Virginia Tech ACC wins this season at 6.5 back in October, I'd have bet the under. I don't know about you, but I would have. And they're sitting there with 7 right now. I think that's pretty dang impressive.
I agree. And I wanted to ask you, how would you evaluate, and obviously it's not over, how would you evaluate Mike Young's first season? Because to your point, and I don't know if maybe I was just too down on them, I expected nothing from this team this year. Yeah. So how do we evaluate year one of Mike Young?
I think you evaluate it well and consider it encouraging. And with your top 4 scorers being freshmen, I think you're even more encouraged as you gaze ahead at the seasons to come. I think he's had a heck of a start.
I would agree. And I'm interested in, and I'm writing about this for next week, the dynamic of some of these players. And I'm looking at Tyrese Radford, and I'm telling you the truth here, David. When we had preseason media day at Virginia Tech, everybody was talking about Landers Nolley, how good he was going to be, how impactful he was going to be, what he was going to bring to this program. And there was a kid sitting at a table next to Jalen Cohn, and I wasn't sure who he was, but he mentioned his relationship with Landers Nolley, so I interviewed him. That was Tyrese Radford. I didn't know who he was in preseason media day. He's the best player on the team right now, David. What has Tyrese Radford meant to this program?
I think he's the Hokies MVP.
Yeah.
I really do. And barring the strange and unusual, I intend to vote for him for the ACC's all-freshman team ahead of Landers Nolley. I mean, I know that Nolley is among the top 10 scorers in the league and leads Virginia Tech in scoring, but he doesn't shoot it that well. And most recently, he's in a dreadful slump. I totaled up last six games, Landers Nolly is 15 for 72 from the floor. That's 20.8%. Tyrese Radford, Mike, is averaging 6.3 rebounds a game. That's best on the team. And his 68 offensive rebounds are more than double any other Hokie. And hello, Tyrese Radford is 6 foot one. He's my size, dude. And he's shooting 61.5% from the floor, often in the paint and finishing against much taller players. I don't know how he does it. I just know it's a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
It's been great to watch. And I think even guys like me who watch pretty closely, I got a little bit caught up in the idea of he is such a great rebounder. He does a lot of the little things, the garbage things to get himself and kind of stuff the stats that way. He's there for stick backs, and that's huge. But let's not make it sound like this is some, you know, second-rate talent who's just playing his butt off. This kid's got talent. When he puts the ball on the deck and drives to the rim with that left hand, there aren't a lot of guys in the ACC that we've seen who can stop him.
That's right, and he can go to his right as well. And, you know, Beattie's a terrific on-the-ball defender. I think Radford's a really good defender. Jalen Cohn has really given him a lift. I mean, that's a kid who's shooting better than 49% from beyond the arc. I mean, when he goes up and the way he elevates, he's going to score a lot of points before he leaves Blacksburg. A lot.
Yeah, there was no question when Mike Young got Jalen Cohn that that was an ACC talent. It kind of changed the feel around the Mike Young hire with, you know, could he recruit? Then he got Jalen Cohn. Now, part of the question of could he recruit, he was bringing Hunter Couture with him. He had recruited Hunter Couture to Wofford, and there were a lot of naysayers saying, that's cute, that's nice, he needs to fill his roster, that kid doesn't belong in the ACC. He scored 8 points in a critical stretch in the second half against Clemson. I asked him about it after the game, and, you know, he wasn't going to trash talk his doubters, but that's a kid who people said didn't belong in the ACC. David, he belongs in the ACC.
Threw one down last night, didn't he?
Yeah, big dunk. That impressed Tyrese Radford. The three-point shooting. I just think that Hunter Couture is sort of emblematic of some of what this team is. And Tyrese Radford, too. Guys that maybe were overlooked or underappreciated. And, yeah, to your point about the success in Mike Young's first year, I think those guys have all maybe overachieved or achieved at a level that at least we didn't expect.
And Couture is unafraid. I mean, he'll take a big shot now. He really will, and he's got nice looking form. I like him. I mean, I don't see him as a 35 minute guy. But I think he can really be a spark for him.
Yeah, he's proven he can contribute over a long ACC season. And that brings us, David, to take it or leave it, because this is an even longer ACC season.
All right, another question for both of you from HQ. The ACC went to a 20-game schedule this season. Now, it remains to be seen what kind of impact that will have on its NCAA selections. Mike, we'll start with you. Take it or leave it, the ACC with 20 games.
Yeah, I like it. And I know it's a grind, and I know that it may cost the league when it comes to selection time. But at the end of the day, the ACC has some of the best programs in the country. There's going to be fluctuations year in, year out, but the ACC has some of the best programs in college basketball. And the more you play those teams, that helps your strength of schedule. You've got more chances for big wins. I get it that it's a grind, man, but it was a grind before they went to 20. It was tough to win games in this league. So understanding that we'll have to see what happens with selections this year, and honestly, with selections next year, I don't think it's hurting the Big Ten. I look at this and say, I'm going to take it. I like the longer schedule. I like as much ACC basketball as I can get.
David, 20 ACC games, take it or leave it.
We're not going to split on this one, guys. I'm fine with it. And Mike, you referenced the Big Ten. It didn't hurt the Big Ten last year, got 8 bids. It's not going to hurt the Big Ten this year. And they're probably looking at 9 to 11 bids. If the ACC is concerned, as well it should be, that the league is not going to get the number of bids it's accustomed to this season, That's because it didn't do the job in the non-conference. It has nothing to do with 20 conference games.
And speaking of the ACC, you mentioned the Big Ten, 9, 10, 11 teams maybe headed to the NCAA tournament. When you look at the ACC, perception is it's going to be much fewer for their league. Perception is the ACC is down this year. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it is. Now, the bar is high. That's the way it is in this conference. The ACC is the most storied league in college basketball history, and it's earned that reputation. In March and in November through February as well. But this year, as we just talked about, they didn't get the job done in the non-conference. And yes, they're going to probably be relegated to 4, 5, 6 if everything fell right in Greensboro. Maybe they could get 6. I think 4 or 5 is far more likely, and that's disappointing for the league. Yes, you know, right now, the bottom teams in the league have won 6 conference games. That's impressive. And some of the coaches were talking about, yeah, but you look at the Big Ten and they've got, say, Nebraska and Northwestern sitting there as bottom feeders. You know, maybe I think they've won a combined 3 conference games between them, the Cornhuskers and the Wildcats. But need I remind people that Northwestern, which is the Big Ten's worst team this year in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, won at Boston College, which has won 7 ACC games. Yeah. Those are the kind of losses that just crush you.
Is there anything you can do then when you have that start to the year? And I think we all saw it coming, right? We saw some of those non-conference losses. Then you get into the heart of the ACC schedule. Is there anything you can do as a league to make up for that? Or is it just you let the chips fall where they may?
There really isn't anything, Mike, because the numbers just feed upon themselves once you get into conference play. Once you get through non-league and those computer rankings have kind of been solidified, it's hard to make drastic jumps. I mean, Virginia didn't even crack the top 50 of the net until this week. I mean, they're number 22 in the Associated Press poll. I think if the tournament were to start today, they'd be in that 7-8 seed range, but not according to the net. They're sitting there like number 48.
I think you and I agree. Florida State, Duke, Louisville, and Virginia are in the NCAA tournament. They've done enough work. Who's 5th, 6th? Who are the teams that still have a shot? And who in that group do you like to get it done?
Well, I've been kind of on the NC State train all season, but the Wolfpack has not inspired much confidence of late. And if Kevin Keats's crew loses Saturday against Wake Forest. Now, I don't anticipate that, but it's certainly possible. If that were to happen, then I think their at-large hopes are pretty much done, barring some serious, serious work in Greensboro. You know, Syracuse would be the 5th seed right now. You know, the Orange closed the regular season Saturday at Miami. There's probably going to be about 500 people there. And no, it was dead. It was dead there last night. You could tell TV tried to do them favors and not show the stands much. But it's hardly going to be a formidable home court for the Hurricanes. You know, if Syracuse could get to 11-9 and then do some damage, but its quad one record is so bad and its non-conference schedule ranking is so low that the Orange has a tough road.
Yeah, I thought Clemson, with its quality wins, you think about some of the wins Clemson's had at the back end, but man, I mean, the Tech game, I think, took them out of it. What was wrong with Clemson that they could have wins like that and just could never get the traction to get any consistency?
Well, they couldn't do it on the road. Yeah. They were such a home centric team. Yeah, the Louisville, Duke, and Florida State wins were all at Little John. And then the Tigers would go on the road and just come up empty. And much like Virginia Tech, Mike, Clemson was all about shooting, and they were all over the map. You know, one, and I'm sitting here looking at some stats. Now, I say they couldn't get it done on the road. Their best road game was at Boston College. They make 12 of 23 from three. Very next game, they go 2 for 20. Mm. I mean, those kind of fluctuations will just kill you every time.
Yeah, and David, that's exactly what happened at the Virginia Tech game. They actually came out and hit 5 early threes. I think they were 5 for their first 10. Then they missed their next 11. When they hit those 5 of 10, it looked like they might run Tech out of its own building for a road win. All of a sudden, they go cold. In one game, you see that fluctuation, and kind of takes Brad Brownell, I think, out of the conversation for Coach of the Year. I wrote a lengthy article this week about Tony Bennett and his case for ACC Coach of the Year. And I mean, to recap, it's pretty obvious. It's where they are in the standings. You lost your big three to the NBA. You've won all those close games. You've kind of found some answers to the offensive woes. So here's my question. Did you buy my argument? Does Tony Bennett have a good case to be the ACC Coach of the Year? And if not, who's the guy?
Well, I think he's certainly, Mike, among the two clear candidates, and the other being Leonard Hamilton at Florida State. I mean, the Seminoles lost 6 of their top 8 scores from a Sweet 16 team. One that, by the way, eliminated Virginia from the ACC tournament last March in Charlotte. But right now, If Florida State beats Boston College on Saturday in Tallahassee, which you would certainly think that the Seminoles will do. I mean, they're undefeated at home. They're 15-0. If Florida State wins that game, Florida State will, at worst, share the ACC regular season title for the first time in its history. The Seminoles joined the league in 1991. Given what Florida State lost, given what it's accomplished, that would be enough for me. And I would vote for Leonard Hamilton.
I think that's fair. Before I let you go here, before we get out of here on this week's episode, David, you had another great basketball story in this week's Richmond Times-Dispatch, and people can read it still at richmond.com, looking at Hampton's Jermaine Merrow. How big an accomplishment is it that Jermaine became the state's all-time leading scorer?
Yeah, all-time Division I scored, eclipsing the record set by Reggie Williams at VMI, entering tonight. You know, we're recording this on Thursday, full disclosure. Hampton plays tonight in the Big South tournament down in Radford against Longwood. But entering that game, Jermaine is on the verge of cracking 2,600 career points, which is pretty remarkable. He's been a 4-year starter. And right now, he's the only player in the country to be ranked among the top 15 nationally in both scoring and assists. He's averaging 24.3 points and 6.5 assists. And he's about to become the first player in Big South history to lead the league in scoring and assists.
Now, he told you that he's modeled his game some, patterned his game some after AI, Allen Iverson. Mm-hmm. You know a little bit about Allen Iverson's game.
Just a little.
Yeah. You see some similarities there?
Yeah, I do. And the connection there, Mike, between Iverson and Morrow is natural. I mean, Morrow's a Newport News kid. I mean, he went to Heritage High School, and Allen was actually born in Newport News and lived in Newport News before he ended up at Hampton's Bethel High. And they're both little. They're both fearless. Let's be clear. Morrow cannot jump like Iverson could. I mean, he does not have those kind of springs, but he is willing to go into that lane and just absorb punishment. I mean, the kid has played through all kinds of pain and discomfort this year, and most recently, he's had a groin tear, and he and his roommate were both telling me that there are times when the kid's leg just gets all discolored and nasty. And I mean, he hasn't missed a game because of the groin. He missed 6 games because of a broken right thumb, which, hello, he's right-handed. That's going to affect your shooting. But I mean, he's just as tough. And that's just the way he was raised. And his dad was a football player here in the 757. And Jermaine chose basketball, and clearly wisely so.
Yeah, that was a great story, and also reminded me of one of the things I love so much about the NCAA tournament is there are Jermaine Morrow types, maybe not with those numbers, but there are those type of players probably all over the country at smaller schools that we don't get to enjoy and we don't get to see much of in the regular season. And they tend to get highlighted in the NCAA tournament in those early matchups when somebody's a 16 or a 15 or in a play-in game. And your story really reminded me that that's one of the best parts of March Madness is getting to learn about some of these kids out there. I don't know that Jermaine will be there, but there are a lot of kids we don't know about with great stories and having great seasons. And I'm looking forward to that part of March Madness.
Absolutely. I'll tell you one who could be there from right here in the Commonwealth, who we know about, but perhaps the country at large doesn't know much about, and that would be Nathan Knight at William & Mary.
Great player. Great player.
He's really good. I don't know if it would be overseas or the G League or the NBA, but that young man is going to make pilefuls of cash playing basketball, and he's had an exceptional senior season. And he's got the Tribe as the number two seed behind Hofstra entering the CAA tournament this weekend.
Yeah, and if they're able to win that tournament, he's going to be a big, big reason why. Well, that's our show for this week. Thanks for listening. You can get all our coverage of UVA, Tech, and the ACC by subscribing to Richmond.com. Our Sports Plus option gives you access to all of it for $6.99 a month, or sign up for a full year for less than $60. It's the best way to follow your team this March and a great way to support local journalism. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer. Teal and Barber is a podcast of the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Richmond.com. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening, and please join us again next week.